C.N. Lester's new book, Trans Like Me, Conversations for All of Us, is a collection of essays about the trans experience. They write openly about everything from a history of trans celebrities to the importance of inclusive feminism. Lester says while the heightened awareness and advocacy for trans rights in recent years is a good thing, in some cases the increased media attention has also led to the spread of misinformation. In fact, the first chapter of the book is titled The Production of Ignorance, discussing the fear-mongering about trans people. They argue that in order to truly learn about trans people, we first have to unlearn what we think we already know. Lester is a leading LGBTI activist, a musician, and a writer. They co-founded the first national queer youth organization in the UK and work as a classical singer, a composer, and a feminist musicology researcher. It is a pleasure to welcome C.N. Lester to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you very much for having me all the way over from London.
Well, it's very nice to have you with us. The book is very important, very interesting, fascinating. I want to, I guess, start with a line that I just read of the importance of having to often unlearn what we think we already know. And I'm curious as to your thoughts on how we learned what we think we already know.
Well, I think so much of the time what we learn is not learning, we're not learning this at school, we're not learning this through formal lessons or formal knowledge. We're picking it up from television programs, we're picking it up from jokes and innuendos and gossip, and that kind of fabulizing or mythologizing of a subject, and it gets passed and passed from person to person. And so often what we then say we think we know about trans people, for example, is really what we've picked up from watching CSI repeats, maybe looking at tabloid headlines, seeing a movie maybe, or hearing a friend of a friend talk about someone who is coming out at work. But none of that translates to sort of real knowledge, unprejudiced, sort of straight-based facts.
So in a perfect world moving forward, where should we learn that?
I would say always go to the source, regardless of what you're talking about. You know, whether you want to talk about the best recipe, in your favorite kind of cuisine, or you want to find out about your favorite composer, go to the person who knows it best. And in this instance, go to trans people. You know, we are the ones living these lives. But also, the majority of researchers looking into sort of trans history or sort of the interactions of trans feminism and different feminist movements and human rights movements are trans themselves. We are a human rights movement, if you can call it that, which is full of incredibly wise people, both within sort of the academy, within universities, and within everyday life. And there's so much knowledge going to waste. It really bothers me. I love learning stuff. I'm a complete nerd, as you may have been able to tell. So I would say, you know, go to those sources of information where the knowledge is freshest and it's also the most sincere.
You write in the book about your personal journey to find the right words and the right pronouns to describe your gender identity. Is that universal, though? Would I have so if I go to the source and I go to you, are you going to give me a very similar answer to someone else, or is that different?
I think we can think of common themes that arise when we talk to trans people. You know, a common theme that a lot of us experience is bullying. A common theme that many of us experience is needing to find a key word that helps us find out about people like us. So that word might be transgender, that word might be genderqueer, the word increasingly is non-binary. But you will see so many different variations because trans isn't a noun. It's not this singular thing. It's an adjective, and it's an adjective that describes people from all walks of life, from all different experiences. And that's a real strength of the trans experience, is it's not one experience. It's hundreds of thousands, it's millions of experiences, joined together by a sense that we all deserve the right to define who we are and live free from discrimination, free from oppression, free from the fear of violence.
You write in the book about the breaking the binaries of man and woman, and as you said, understanding non-binary gender. That is, your explanation of it in the book makes it very simple, which I ask the question of, given that simplicity, why is it so hard for many people?
I think it is hard, and this is where I find it very interesting. I think once we start talking to each other as equal human beings, it's suddenly not difficult any longer. The majority of people, certainly that I talk to, not just in my work as an equalities trainer or as a public speaker, but you know, people I chat to after work in the pub or people I chat to at sort of family and friend meetups, if we're willing to listen to one another, those explanations can come quite simply. I think the problem with explaining, say, that gender is more complicated than just, you know, box A over here and box B over there, comes because we become frightened, we become very defensive, we often don't want to listen to each other, and we start throwing up all of these straw man arguments and, you know, all the usual things that happen when people don't listen to each other or don't respect each other's experiences. But certainly, I don't think there is, you don't need to have a degree in gender studies to understand the fact that people have been doing gender in some really creative ways pretty much ever since we started recording human history. That's just what human beings do. We are diverse, we're creative, and we're usually challenging the status quo at different points. It's how we grow as societies.
You write in the book, claiming that our words are too hard to understand perpetuates the idea that we are too hard to understand and suggest that there's no point in trying. And I certainly understand that. But I also know that there are a great number of people who want to do the right thing. Mm. And they look to find what that right thing is. And I guess that comes into it as well, doesn't it? Meaning that they want to be inclusive. They want to understand. And it's the best way to approach that topic, as you earlier suggested, go to the source.
Mm. And I think rather than worrying about having to sort of memorize a glossary of, you know, 150 words that might update every January or whatever, you know, the latest sort of scaremongering headlines are, just think about some very easy to follow processes that you're probably already doing in your everyday life. So the first is that when we speak to people, we mirror back the language that they use. You know, pretty simple. When you meet someone and they say, "Hey, my name's Katie," you say, "Oh, hey, Katie." You don't immediately sort of start interrogating that or asking for an explanation of why they're named that. I think the second would be not to sort of complicate things, worry that you're going to get it wrong. You can ask. You can always say, you know, "Can I just check? Am I saying this correctly, or, you know, am I using the right pronouns?"
Right.
And I think it's just keeping an open mind to learning more.
So a couple of topics that you tackle in the book that I would like to talk about in our time left. One is you write about trans celebrities and the history of trans celebrities. It is often the gateway for many people in understanding and learning about trans people and trans rights. I am curious as to your thoughts on this and the very thought-provoking essay that you have in the book. It seems that it's a double-edged sword, isn't it?
I think it often comes down to sort of how we're interpreted and how willing we are to go along with the media game. Certainly in the UK media, I think you get a lot in the US as well. If you're trans and in the public eye, you get a lot of requests for things like before and after photographs. People want to have surgery photographs, you know, really want to know some very graphic details of our private lives. And these kind of things can give you, you know, certainly a paying story. It can pay very well. It can give you a foothold into sort of celebrity status. But overall, it can be quite damaging for the trans community in terms of the tropes that it sets up. So I think there are definitely some trans people who are celebrities who are not necessarily being the most helpful for other trans people. And then other trans celebrities, I mean, very famously Janet Mock and Laverne Cox, who are not just, you know, incredibly talented as writers and actresses, but are bringing a real sense of integrity and education to the way that they talk about trans rights and other trans people. So I think it can be done. It's just difficult. And, you know, hats off to anyone who manages it.
You also talk in the book about feminist movements and trans exclusion from those movements, and ultimately the importance of what you refer to as inclusive feminism. I'm interested in how you look at that and what you feel the challenges are of being included in those discussions.
I think the difference I have found, and just to say a little bit of my background, is, you know, I've been a feminist ever since I was tiny, and, you know, my whole professional and private world is really embedded in feminist movements in terms of feminist musicology and feminist writing and feminist activism. And the difference I've noticed between an exclusionary form of feminism and an inclusive form of feminism is the exclusionary type tends to treat feminism like a special club. And you have to do special things to get in. You have to be judged worthy. You have to not do certain things and do certain things. And I find that a very limiting way of approaching a movement which has the benefit, you know, the ability to benefit every person on the planet. An inclusive kind of feminism, which is certainly what I benefit from and what I hope to be able to give back to, says instead, like, what are our tools? What are our feminist tools? What are we doing to make sure that violence against women is ending? What are we doing to make sure that nobody suffers from gender stereotypes and coercion? You know, what can we do so that every single person has a stake in this fight and can do something to help make things better? So again, I think there's a lot of mudslinging and there's a lot of, we can get too theoretical sometimes, but I honestly think it's as simple sometimes as having the humility to say, I don't know everything, but I want to help, versus I'm the best feminist in the world, and, you know, you don't get to join my club.
You conclude the book with an essay entitled Futures, and you write, the last 100 years have seen the most extraordinary changes in how society thinks of sex and gender, and trans people have been at the front and center of these changes. So how do you look at the future? How would you forecast it, if that is even possible?
Oh, I think it's, you know, certainly in the political environment at the moment, both across Europe and the U.S., you know, what news headlines do you wake up to in the morning, and are you in a hopeful or depressed mood about them? I worry very much about this sort of right-wing pushback, a very nationalistic, very racist in many parts, political movement, which is enjoying a global sort of resurgence. And that makes me very frightened for the futures of trans people, many of whom are very vulnerable to this kind of right-wing violence. But at the same point, I am meeting the most extraordinary people every day, really of all ages. This is not just a youth movement. You know, I'm meeting trans allies and trans people in their 70s and 80s who are excited about the future and opening up new possibilities. I think what I would always say is I'm hopeful for the future so long as we keep working to make it a good one. And when I meet people who are working in whatever way to make a more equal society for all people, then I feel that trans people have a chance that we're going to flourish and keep enhancing our understandings of what gender is and what we can do in terms of human autonomy and human creativity and potential.
For you, what makes a good ally?
I think the ability to listen is the first thing. So it's always that sense of, you know, tell me what you need is kind of what I want to hear and what I want to say to someone else who might need my help. I think an ability to do the kind of things that maybe we can't do for ourselves. So standing up when someone's talking behind our back, for example, or maybe if we're being threatened and my ally is not, they can take a risk to stand up for me. And then on a really basic level, I absolutely love it when you have the kind of friends, they know if you've had a bad day, you've had a lot of transphobia, and they are there with a glass of wine and, you know, let's just watch something brain dead and kick back and, you know, they have your back. I think it's a sense of being a friend. It's being a friend and it's also being an accomplice. And yeah, I don't think it has to be hard, but I think it has to come from the heart.
It's such a thoughtful book. It is Trans Like Me, Conversations for All of Us. The book is published by Seal Press. C.N. Lester, thank you so much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Trans Like Me, Conversations for All of Us. C.N. Lester is the author. The book is published by Seal Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.